Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Source Material. We are at our 218th episode. That's right, 218 episodes right here on the Rattlitchin Broadcasting Network. And this, yeah, that's right.
It fits.
boy, oh boy. Well, okay. So this week we have jumped into the realm of another company crossover. This is actually the second one we've done. Last week was Dark Horse and DC doing Batman, Hellboy, Starman. This week is Boom Studios in DC coming at us with Green Lantern and the Planet of the Apes. So joining me on this cross-company journey, Mark Rattlitch, the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Patriarch. Sir, are you ready to talk some Planet of the Apes and some Green Lantern?
Oh, yes. Better than Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes. I don't know if it's better than Kong on the Planet of the Apes. We'll find out next year, possibly.
I'm really curious. I just want to ask real quick.
Yes.
Are you a Planet of the Apes fan? Is that something that you've, like, have you watched those movies and know a lot about them? And
I mean, I've not the old ones.
Okay.
I've only watched the new trilogy and the Tim Burton atrocity.
Okay. Well, I know this is our set. Yeah, you said Tarzan, Planet of the Apes, and I just had flashbacks of the nosebleeds that we got trying to discuss
Baby Darkseid and
Tarzan, and there was time travel, and it was just
syphilis showed up.
Gosh, that was a rough one. Well, you know, hopping in here, we've drafted him from the Casual Heroes, Gavin Napier. He has joined us here. Gavin, are you excited to talk about Planet of the Apes and Green Lantern coming together here?
For the first time in my life, I regret volunteering to discuss something Green Lantern.
Well, I can't wait to talk about that. Cannot wait to talk about it. All right. So, Mark, why in the hell are we doing this book this week?
Well, this is another one of our tossed salad and scrambled eggs weeks where nothing matches. It's all a jumbled mess. Tomorrow, I won't even be around. The Damn You Hollywood will be taking place. It'll be Robert Winfrey, Alexis Haina, and young Jason Teasley, the little boy.
Coming up in the podcasting. can't wait.
Yeah, our mascot, chipper young Jason Teasley, will be reviewing Pet Sematary while my wife and I are at Whitesnake. And then Wednesday, I don't have my schedule directly in front of me, but we got something else going on that doesn't match anything else.
Okay, so just random. You didn't have any...
It's Twar. Hell, that's what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. Hold your heathen hammer high, ladies and gentlemen. Right.
And then on Thursday, I'm going to see Avengers. Fuck all y'all.
Oh.
it's just... So this has been on the list of things I just wanted to do. I saw that this was a thing back when it was coming out issue by issue, and I was like, oh, that seems like a fun title to read. And so we waited and waited, and we were actually supposed to do it a lot earlier than this, but stuff came up, and you know, we like to synergize here in the Rattlers and Broadcasting Network. So this got bumped to a week where there was nothing else going on.
Yeah, this came out in 2017. Like I said, DC Boom Studios, our creative team, Justin Jordan and Robbie Thompson. I think Robbie Thompson did the story, and then either way, they're credited as the writers here from where I grabbed it, either off the wiki or whatever webpage. I cite my sources, as you can see. Artists, Barnaby Bagenda, which I believe the art stayed the same throughout the whole book. I already kind of asked you, Mark, about, you know, your familiarity with the Planet of the Apes and what you've covered there. And I think we've talked a little bit about Green Lantern before on here, but I want you to go ahead and rehash it for me. How much do you know, or do you remember when you first started reading about Green Lantern?
I read Green Lantern comics hither and thither as a kid. I would say I read it in the late 80s to early 90s, and then I don't think I read consecutive issues. Certainly once we got to the New 52 and all of that, I had to go on back and read some of that stuff. I did not read it as it was coming out.
Okay.
Green Lantern is just one of those characters I was immediately drawn to just because of his look. He looked cool to me. I like the idea of having a magic ring that you can turn into a machine gun. you know, or an axe or whatever. So, you know,
even a boxing glove.
Yes. and I like, and except for Kyle Rayner, who I thought was a little fagula. No, just not gay, just merry. I like.
He was an artiste, sir. He was an artiste.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he was. I even like Guy Gardner, and I like Jon Stewart. I would say in recent years, the most familiar I am with Green Lantern would be from the Justice League cartoons.
Okay.
And that would be the ye old Jon Stewart.
Got it. Gavin, let's talk about Planet of the Apes first for you. Did you watch the old movies? Are you a fan, or what's your thoughts here?
The first couple with Charlton Heston, as they got into the multiple sequels, I didn't really keep up with them, didn't really have any interest in tracking those down. I didn't mind the Tim Burton movie for the era that it was in, and given how campy the originals were, I thought Tim Burton probably took it a little too seriously, but you know, for the early 2000s and what they were trying to do, I didn't mind it. Certainly nothing I'm going to go back and watch again. The modern remakes of the movies, I did enjoy those until the last one. Didn't really enjoy the last one. It felt a little hokey and predictable to me. If you couldn't see where Woody Harrelson's character arc was going, then you've apparently never seen a movie in your life. But aside from that very obvious narrative, I enjoyed the newer movies as well. So yeah, I'm familiar with Planet of the Apes. I like the mythology. I'm well versed enough to make a reference here and a reference there. Not my favorite property by any stretch of the imagination. It's just sort of there for me.
Yeah, I think we're all just probably about on the same level. I don't think I finished the franchise yet, the newer franchise. I've wanted to. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and watch. I think I watched the second movie, and I haven't watched the final one yet.
The third one works best if you can't sleep.
Okay. All right. And then I think I remember watching the very first with the Charlton Heston, the very first one. And I remember watching that one when I was very young. I've never went back and revisited. I just haven't had the chance. There's a lot of people that are big fans of the Planet of the Apes franchise. I'm not one of them. It's nothing I hate. It's just I don't know the characters. And what we find and what I remember, there's established characters in that universe. I unfortunately had to go to the wiki sometimes to figure out, okay, what's this person's motivation? Where did they fall at in the series and in the movies, and who were they? Specifically, I mean, like right off the bat in this book, there's mention of this guy by the name of Taylor. And I had to go to the wiki. I'm like, okay, I recognize the name. That's obviously Heston's character, right?
Yes.
I'll take that as a yes.
yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I had to go and do a little bit of research. But, all right, aside from that, Gavin, Green Lantern, sir, please give us a little bit about your history with that character.
Actually, Green Lantern and Deadman were my introduction to comic books when I was probably 5-6 years old. Both series at the time were being drawn by Neil Adams.
And, oh, yeah. Great. And, tremendous artist.
Yeah. And that sort of defined what comics were to me for a long time. That Green Lantern, Green Arrow series, and the Deadman series, and then later G.I. Joe comics, and then I branched out into more superhero books. But Green Lantern has, from the word go, always been at the very top of the list of my favorite characters. Didn't really enjoy what they did in the early 90s when they started to age Hal Jordan, but we did get the classic Emerald Twilight storyline out of it. And I never did care for Kyle Rayner. I like what they've done with him more since he moved on from being an actual Green Lantern and embraced the other parts of the spectrum and gives him a little bit more well-defined character on his own rather than being just another Green Lantern. I do like Guy Gardner. I like Jon Stewart. A lot of the weird space Green Lanterns I'm a big fan of. I really don't care for Simon Boz. Can do without him. But even Robert Venditti's work on it after Jeff Johns sort of stepped away after his what would become the seminal run for Green Lantern through the years. I think Robert Venditti followed that up very nicely and established some more of his own and did a good job fleshing out that universe. I haven't really kept up with it since Grant Morrison has taken over. I read the first couple of issues, and as one would expect, it's super weird.
Yeah.
I haven't kept up with Grant Morrison's run. At some point, I'm sure I'll check it out because I love Green Lantern and Grant Morrison's version of weirdness can be super fun at times. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But Green Lantern is, he's a staple of comic books for me. Anytime I have an interest in comic books, it's one of the first things I check out and see what I've missed.
Yeah. So we may rely on you for a little bit of knowledge in regards to the property Green Lantern and some of the characters and stuff. I know most of who shows up in here. Bear with me if I have to ask you some questions. So, all right, well, let's go ahead. We'll get into the synopsis here. Really? Okay, so like I said, this came out in 2017, all right? Our core characters in this book are the ones we are pretty familiar with, where we have, when I'm talking the DC side anyway, we have Green Lantern, we have some of the Lantern Corps, which includes Guy Gardner, Kilowog, I want to pronounce her name as Arisa or Arisha. There's also some of the familiar names from the Planet of the Apes world. Cornelius, General Ursus, Dr. Zaius, I think is his name.
Dr. Zaius.
Taylor, like I said earlier, and Nova, and Zira, I think. Zira is her name. So if you recognize those names, you're a Planet of the Apes fan, those characters are in this story. All right, synopsis time. When a powerful lantern ring is activated by an ape called Cornelius on the Planet of the Apes, Sinestro makes a plan to cross into that reality to acquire it. However, this universal ring also sends waves alerting the Guardians of its awakening. When Hal Jordan attempts to stop Sinestro above New York, they both are thrown into the Planet of the Apes world through a portal. They arise with no powers as the universal ring is feeding off of their rings. The Guardians then send Kilowog, Guy Gardner, Arisha, to find Hal and stop the potential threat of the Universal Ring. The only problem is Cornelius has donned the ring and is amassing an army of humans and apes to face the oppressors by Dr. Zaius, General Ursus, and the army of Ape City. And for a little spice, throw in some Red Lanterns, Gorilla Grodd, and a dash of Token. Can Hal and his friends from the Green Lantern Corps stop Cornelius before he is driven mad by the Universal Ring with thoughts of destroying the world? Planet of the Apes, Green Lantern aims to scratch that cross-property itch you didn't even know you had. So there's my synopsis. Very, very truncated. This was 6 issues. You know, we'll start out here first, Gavin. I want to start with you in regards to the concept of this thing brought forth. You know, there was this universal ring. We're used to different colored lanterns as part of the, I want to say, the emotional spectrum. We have red lanterns, which represent rage. We have, and now see, I've already lost it. Green, which represents will. Yellow, which is Sinestro. His lantern or his ring, I guess, represents fear. Now we have this universal ring that they've thrown in as, you know, the big reason why everybody has to get together. And that's why I mentioned Tolkien, because when you put this thing on, it almost corrupts you, and you're able to turn into whatever lantern you want. I mean, you could be a Red Lantern, you could be a Green Lantern, whatever. What do you think of the concept of this book, at the outset?
Lazy, horrible, one trope after the other. It's a retread of everything that Green Lantern has overdone through the years.
Really?
It felt just so completely unoriginal to me that, you know, 5-6 pages in, oh, great, here's this super powerful weapon that the Guardians didn't tell anybody about. And now the Green Lanterns are mad at the Guardians, and now they're going to go explore it anyway. And the Guardians are going to give them something that might help, but they can't promise that it will. It's everything Green Lantern has done for decades.
Well, I mean, look, you're given the task as a writer to find a reason to cross the Green Lanterns over with Planet of the Apes. So, you know, it's either bring the planet, either bring the apes to the DC universe or send the Green Lanterns to the Planet of the Apes universe. And they chose the latter. So, you know, so then the second thing is, but why? So, you know, creating a powerful all-spectrum ring for Sinestro to go after makes as, you know, much sense as anything else. I like the idea of the Planet of the Apes universe is in a time loop where it just keeps, you know, a causal time where, you know, it gets to a certain point in time and, you know, it causes you know, the end of humanity and the rise of the apes to happen, and it just keeps going like that. So they figured, okay, this is a safe place to dump this thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, what did I think? I think you don't want to do what they did with Tarzan and the Planet of the Apes and over fucking complicate it. You know, it's essentially, you want to get to the Green Lanterns, you know, fighting with the apes or fighting alongside the apes or fight, you know, using an ape as a weapon. Who cares? You just want to get there. And so they established a very simple premise, and you know, maybe it's too simple for some, but I mean, I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was earth shattering or anything. I thought it was a reason to move the story forward and get to what we're paying money for, which is Green Lanterns and apes.
Yeah, yeah. This is clearly not Batman, Starman, Hellboy, where it's just completely simple. This seems more intricate and seems to have more of a. I would say it seems more genuine.
Yeah, no one punched a Nazi in this one.
Just, well, I mean, they could be punching Nazis all they want, but I felt the characters here, at least the Green Lanterns, felt real to me. I mean, Gavin, I know you said this feels like something that had been done over and over, but what were your thoughts on the way that the writers here handled the characters of the Green Lanterns? Did they feel like this is definitely our DC universe, Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner and all that?
Yeah, I mean, they stayed true to the basic parts of the character. There wasn't a whole lot of depth to them, and maybe in a 6-issue miniseries you don't have time to explore that depth. But, you know, Hal is the guy that he didn't ignore it when he was told to ignore it, because that's what Hal does. And Guy Gardner's the guy that likes to fight, and so he fights a lot. I mean, it was very basic surface level stuff. And again, maybe 6 issues isn't enough time to explore any type of depth, but whatever the reason, we certainly didn't get it. These were the stereotypes of the characters that have been established, and they never really pushed past that.
This felt like an episode of the Green Lantern show. Like, I'm not naming one in particular. I never actually watched the Green Lantern exclusive cartoon, but this felt like an episode. Like, it could be the episode of a Green Lantern show, where on this episode, Sinestro goes to an alternate universe to find an ultimate weapon, and Hal Jordan chases him, and the Green Lantern Corps go after Hal. You know, that sort of thing.
Oh, it's a two-parter.
Yeah, this is a season finale, season opener for the cartoon.
There you go. That's right.
But that's kind of what it felt like. It felt like, you know, this week on the Green Lantern show, which is fine.
Well, I mentioned Tolkien and Lord of the Rings, Mark. I made a reference to that. Did you get that feel too?
Explain.
Okay. Well, yeah, one ring to rule them all.
Okay.
That kind of shined through to me, like, okay, well, now we have this ultimate ring and it's corrupting the user. I mean, there were so many times where I was like, there were so many allusions to what I felt Lord of the Rings was. And I thought, well, sure enough, Mark would probably pick up on that. But
sure. When I was reading it, I did.
Okay.
And then you can see how much it stuck with me.
Lord of the Rings, what?
Like, what about, there's no cave troll in this.
Let's talk about our big moments, I guess, of the book, if there were any that stood out to you.
Well, I'm going to assume that this book is just entirely outside of canon due to
the sheer volume
of people that died.
It has to be.
But, you know, I'm always a big fan of seeing Sinestro put on the green ring, and I feel like, you know, the yellow and black or the purple and black, it's a traditional look for Sinestro, but I always think that he looks really cool in the traditional Green Lantern uniform, so that's always fun for me. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Atrocitus, his cat. So
is that his cat?
Yes.
Holy cow, I had no idea.
A big fan of that. I do wish we could have gotten some Chip and Gnort in here with the Green Lantern Corps, but they couldn't squeeze them in. But really, I mean, and it kind of stinks to say this, and I know it's not great material for the podcast, but really nothing stuck out to me other than Cornelius basically becoming what we'd already seen Kyle Rayner become in the White Lantern.
So this is something, I know you said it was retread. So this is, that happened, you say White Lantern. Now, White Lantern was, help me out. Tell me where this is at in continuity.
The White Lantern was the Right Lantern.
It was shortly after the rise of the Black Lanterns. And
okay. This is Brightest Day?
Yeah, the antithesis to the black rings, which represented death. The white ring gave life, and it took Kyle to figure out. How to manage it, how to channel those powers. And at different points, while he was learning how to do that, you would see him turn into the different colored lantern depending on the situation and what it called for.
Oh.
And other than the fact that the Planet of the Apes white lantern was drawn with what appeared to be weird nerve endings all over his body,
yeah,
even the uniform was the same.
I went through it on my second read there. Yes, I read it twice just to make notes, though. I can see on my second read. On the second read, you can see as those nerve endings are, like, you know, early on, they're just creeping up his arm, and then they're slowly taking him over as the panels progress.
Well, it's funny he mentions that, because I was not familiar with that iteration specifically of Kyle Rayner. I read a little bit of the Ion stuff, and you know, you and I read the Search for Ray Palmer, where he was a Green Lantern and all of that. I did not see him specifically as the White Lantern. So when I saw, what's the name of the ape that was doing it? Was it Cornelius?
Yeah.
When I saw Cornelius doing it, I was like, that's actually pretty cool. I like the fact that he'd be having a casual conversation and changing colors. Like, you know, like Richard Pryor's horse in The Wiz. I prefer blue.
Deep cut reference.
Wow. How you like me now? So yeah, I actually thought it was cool that like the uniform would change to a different color of the spectrum depending on how Cornelius was feeling at that time. I enjoyed that.
It's interesting how, you know, Gavin being a very big fan of Green Lantern and well read as well, kind of was tired with it being, you know, kind of retreading things. And here we are, people that we don't. And that was kind of what made it interesting to me, because a lot of stuff I had never seen. So I imagine we can probably easily say that this book is most likely not going to be well received by somebody who is a big fan, or at least it's not going to feel like something new to a big fan of Green Lantern. Now, the thing is that I don't know about the apes themselves, the Planet of the Apes and the characters there, if they felt like they were at least handled the way they should have been, or they felt genuine as when the writers took a shot and used them in the story. They felt like what we read of them last time, Mark, in Tarzan in the Planet of the Apes. Did you understand the apes' motivation here, Mark? These damn dirty apes.
Yeah, I thought it was a fairly straightforward story. Do they, you know, you, I mean, the apes, they're starting, the apes' starting point is they don't trust humans, and you have this one humanoid type alien who is searching for this weapon, and it's not a long jump to go to, well, if you want that weapon, we're not going to let you have it because you might use it against us, and they would go get it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gorilla Grodd, that seemed like a big move to me. I mean, Gavin, were you at least surprised by Gorilla Grodd's appearance and use in this?
Well, when Guy Gardner remarked that he knew just the guy to bring along, I had a sneaking suspicion that it was either going to be Gorilla Grodd or Detective Chimp.
Detective Chimp.
I was hoping for Ultra Humanite.
I mean, I would have probably accepted that, but Grodd seemed like the logical thing here. And honestly, I would probably be more interested in a Grodd on Planet of the Apes book than a Green Lantern on Planet of the Apes book.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see the dynamic there. But again, you know, you can't have a Grodd appearance without Kneel Before Grodd. But even Grodd fit into pretty much every possible trope that we have seen with him previously. And I guess that's the one complaint that I had about the book, is I wish that they would have just at some point done something different with somebody.
I didn't think they really used Grodd enough. I mean, if you're gonna break out that kind of a character and, you know, and use him in the story, I feel like there's so much you can do with Grodd, especially, you know, if it's like, what if Grodd went to the Planet of the Apes? Like, that to me is a hilarious concept, and I would love to see them go a little bit further. You were saying, Jesse, like, it almost should have been a different story, you know, like a whole other book, Grodd on Planet of the Apes, which would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he was underutilized here.
Well, and they did. I mean, I doubt they'll ever be revisiting this. You never know, though. But
they left it open.
They did. What looked like Ursus, it appeared General Ursus, like, killed him. And right at the end, in the last couple pages, you see, well, there's a lot of things that happen towards the end that kind of leave it open-ended. You see Grodd laying there. Did he not have power over the apes, or not as much power? Because he was laying there on the table. He was clearly alive. Everybody thought that Ursus killed him, but he was clearly alive, and he was laying there, and the purpose was to take him as prisoner. But either way, Gorilla Grodd's still alive. Then Cornelius, who sacrificed himself to destroy the ring, pretty much, and to try and destroy it and end the threat, does not kill himself either. He ends up on the streets right below the Daily Planet in what I assume is the world of DC. And he's wearing a Green Lantern costume. So I don't know if I missed something there or what. I don't think he wasn't wearing a green ring, was he, Gavin?
Nope.
I didn't think so. He flew up into the sky with the white ring, exploded, and then ended up in the DC universe. So, Gavin, I'm looking at this image you sent of this is Rainer as the White Lantern, right?
Yep.
Okay. Does this happen at the end of Blackest Night, or is this Brightest Day?
I actually think that's after Brightest Day, because there was, after Kyle became the White Lantern, he had like his own series. It was like Kyle Rayner and the New Guardians or something like that.
Okay.
And he was actually able to, just like in this book, he was able to make people into lanterns. He was able to give them rings.
Okay.
And those, the images in the background are sort of what Kyle looked like when he would adopt those personas.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, this universal ring, again, something I had never seen before, so I thought it was a novel concept. Yeah, Cornelius was just creating rings left and right. You get a ring, and you get a ring, and you get a ring. And he's like, here, and I guess one of the bigger points of the book was when he gives the ring to his, I don't know if they're married in the universe, I have no idea, but Zira, they're obviously in love, gives the ring to her, and she at first resists, but because she loves Cornelius so much, she says, you know, she puts the ring on, becomes a universal ring, Green Lantern or whatever, and I have no idea what they're called, but it becomes
Star Sapphire.
Okay, yeah, that's right, she does, because she's purple, right? Yep. She's constantly at odds and feels that what Cornelius is doing is wrong. And then when Grodd takes her as prisoner, I thought that was one of the big moments of this book. In order for Grodd is telling, you know, Cornelius to take the ring off or I'll kill her. And she has just enough willpower to bring the ring up to her face, and she kills herself, so he doesn't have leverage over her anymore, or over him anymore. Of course, that sends Cornelius in a fit of rage, becomes a Red Lantern, and all, you know, pretty much decides, okay, well, I'm going to destroy the world. Zira killing
Mom,
herself.
I'm leaving. I'm going to destroy the world now.
Zira killing herself was big for me, because I didn't expect that to happen. I mean, she straight up blows her own face off. Okay. Any other talking points there, Gavin?
Other than everybody dying, no.
Okay. I mean, Grodd died. Atrocitus got ripped in freaking half, dude.
We open with, you know, a lantern from each part of the spectrum being sacrificed. So,
oh, yeah, that's right.
And Walker, who was the only blue lantern, is now dead. Yeah.
Gavin's not happy. Mark, talking points, what you got left to say?
I enjoyed the story. I was able to follow it more so than Tarzan versus the Planet of the Apes, which gave me a fucking headache.
Yeah, I will definitely agree with you there. That was a really rough one to get through. I wonder who did that one. Go ahead, keep talking.
But like I said, I thought it was a fairly straightforward enough story. I think if you're like a diehard Green Lantern fan and you're like steeped in the mythology and all that, yeah, I can see where Gavin is coming from. I'm not going to take that away from him. But for me, for little old me, who isn't, you know, who liked Green Lantern as a kid but didn't, you know, but it has not read as much, it was fine. With these crossovers, I just want to be able to get through them without, you know, wanting to drill a hole in my head.
I'm just looking
mission
at my notes.
Accomplished.
My notes of Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes have a date of July of 2017. So that's how long it's been since we've talked about that. And I was looking for
that's when we did it, July of 2017.
That's what I've got here. Notes.
Woo, I was in the middle of chemo at that time. No wonder.
So I agree with you, Mark. I mean, the good thing is, I guess I didn't have all that baggage from knowing a lot about Green Lantern's history or recent history to where it made me dislike what we got here. I was invested. I was surprised by Grodd. I was surprised by some of the big moments. And yeah, they made a statement, Gavin, when they started killing people, you could tell, okay, well, this is definitely outside of continuity. Anything goes, which is fine with me, because on our last episode, when we talked about Batman, Hellboy, Starman, that was just a simple, okay, Hellboy's here, we need to go find so-and-so, okay, go beat up some Nazis, we found so-and-so, you know, it's done. There was nothing. There was no consequences. And this is the complete opposite. This is like, hey, guess what? We've got a hold of these two properties, and anything goes. And so they do that, which I'll give them credit for that. I don't mind seeing characters die in a company crossover, because that makes it something that is unique. How's that? It doesn't feel run of the mill, and it doesn't feel like they're hamstrung.
And that I can live with. The interesting part about that is, you know, at one point, that was what Dan Didio's vision for all of DC was, that he didn't necessarily see a need to have continuing comics or the need for one arc to connect to the next, as we've seen, you know, with Batman, for example. You can trace the pattern from, you know, No Man's Land to Hush to Court of Owls to whatever, mm-hmm. Death of the Family. Like, there's a narrative that runs through all of that and connect the dots.
And when it gets to Dark Knight Metal, everyone just gives up.
what Dan Didio's vision for DC at one point was, and it may still be, he just haven't been able to assert it, was that all of the arcs would be like this, like Green Lantern and Planet of the Apes, in that, you know, if you want to kill Batman in this arc, go ahead and kill him. We'll just have a different arc with a Batman story next 6 months. And it would remove the idea of you have to do certain things a certain way, that you can tell any story that you want with any character, and we'll wipe the slate clean and start over with the next arc. And it's okay for crossover.
Yeah.
It's okay for events. Doing that as your standard operating practice, absolute nightmare.
Yeah, because then things don't mean as much. I mean, we've talked about the death of Superman on here and how that really kind of opened the doors to, like, okay, well, anybody can die. I mean, you're pretty much coming out and saying, hey, anybody can die at any point. If I were to see Atrocitus get killed at least month after month in the books that I'm getting, that's going to kind of take the wow factor out for me. You know, I would not be pleased if that was something that they're going to actually do. Elseworlds, go for it. They're doing that Black Label stuff. Have you read any of that, Gavin?
I have not. I'm not even familiar with what that is.
Is this where the DC characters are covered in whiskey?
you had that Wild Turkey Run.
You do the Maker's Mark stuff and you stamp your own book.
Terrific.
It's DC Black Label. Hold on, I'll give you a quick, because I want to make sure I quote it right. It's pretty much, you heard about the whole controversy about Batman's wanger showing up in comic books.
No,
correct. You have not. Welcome back. Welcome back to recent comic books. There.
Have you,
for Gavin?
Do you want to read comics? Have you seen Batman's dick?
Have you seen little Bruce Wang? So okay. The Black Label is very much like Elseworlds. It's the newer. Instead of calling them Elseworlds, it's just got a stamp on there. It says DC Black Label. So there's a title out right now. What is it called? Batman Damned by Brian Azzarella and Lee Bermejo. Okay.
So that's the same creative team that did the big Joker thing, right?
Yes, which we'll be covering later this year when the Joaquin Phoenix movie comes out.
I know Azzarella was part of that. I don't know if Lee was.
I think that's the same artist.
Okay. So, yeah. Anyway, there was that is a standalone story. So they're saying, okay, this is Black Label. This is a standalone story. That's okay. You want to do that in that book? You know, you want to show Bruce Wayne and whatever? Go for it. But, yeah, as for continuity now, they're doing that storyline. Mark, what's it called? Heroes in Crisis, right? Where supposedly there's been two very significant deaths that occurred in that. But again,
is Heroes in Crisis, is that the arc that was supposed to take place after Doomsday Clock?
I believe
because Doomsday Clock is roughly a year and a half behind schedule, it's ruined everything.
Tom King, I think, is doing this. Tom King is doing this shit. What did I just call it? Heroes in Crisis. Yeah.
Boy, I bet Tom King wishes he was back on the Vision series.
He seems to like it over there in DC. I actually heard a recent interview.
How did Doomsday Clock get a year and a half behind?
Gary Frank, which now I say that, and it sounds like I'm taking a shot at Gary Frank as an artist. Gary Frank is actually my favorite comic book artist of all time. I think that everything he draws is gorgeous. It strikes the perfect balance between looking very superhero-y and cartoonish versus looking human and realistic. I love Gary Frank, but because his work is so hyper-detailed, it tends to run behind schedule a lot. And the fact that they're trying to duplicate something with the depth and with the attention to detail that the original Watchmen series had, it's a recipe for disaster. But I'll send a couple of pictures to the Facebook chat just so Mark can see some evidence of Gary Frank's work.
Yeah, when you
on a scale of 1 to Kingdom Come, where does he rank?
Talking about Alex Ross?
Totally different style.
Now wait, on a scale of Scott Keith to
Sam
Alex
Keith,
Ross,
you son of a bitch.
Sorry, Sam
Keith.
On the scale of Sam Keith to Scott Alex Ross.
He's much closer to Alex Ross.
Woo, okay.
Yeah, Mark, to add to kind of what Gavin was talking about there with this Doomsday Clock, you know, you have an artist who takes a lot of time to do that. Then what ends up happening is, just like we were talking about, another arc gets started while this other one's delayed, and then you have continuity things you got to start worrying about. You know, like, oh crap, we just showed this happen in this book and we're about to do the big reveal on Doomsday Clock. Do we have to change something up? So you got to change something up, boom, another delay. So...
okay, it's so this picture of Superman you sent, this is Alex Ross?
That's Gary Frank.
Okay, either way, right, Gary Frank, that's who we were talking about. Yeah, these are really good. This looks like this looks like it was drawn by an adult.
and there, I sent along his version of the Hulk.
Oh, there's a Hulk for you, man. That's a...
yeah, that's a pretty badass. Scary looking Hulk.
That's badass.
Yeah, I really like Frank.
Yeah, that doesn't look like Sam Keith that, you know, who took who just stuck his hand in, you know,
we're covering the max, like the first 10 issues. That's what's going to happen, okay? You're going to push me to where I make you cover the max with me.
Stuck his dick in a jar of paint and smeared it on the page and wrote some dialogue. Yeah, look, it's a Lobo comic.
I mean, while we're yelling about comic book artists, can I just say that I would have been happier if Howard Chaykin had been born without hands.
I haven't seen a Howard Chaykin in a while. Let me pull this up. You got anything handy? Send us his worst work there, Gavin.
Well, that would be pretty much anything. Boy, do I just absolutely hate everything that he's ever done.
Well, it's all
come on, Gavin. I'm looking at some of this stuff. It ain't that bad. Come on, man.
I'm looking for the stuff that drove me insane and made me just absolutely loathe him.
Send me an example of not bad so I can tell you that it looks like trash.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll do that. Here, this is a Superman. This actually doesn't look half bad. There, click on one of those. Now, apparently that's how
it is. Okay, well, why is Superman sniffing glue?
Oh, fuck's sake.
Okay, and was he supposed to be born retarded in this picture? That's a bit D2D, if you ask me.
Oh, come on.
That's a little...
Now, Mark, I will tell you that those are truly exceptional, like, high-end, top-notch versions of Howard Chaykin's art.
Okay.
I'm going to pass along a couple of the more typical, including drawing his renderings of Wolverine.
Oh, no.
That was not too bad.
And his tiny circus people hands.
This one doesn't look too bad. I mean, he doesn't look retarded.
Wait a second.
I'm not on the right Wolverine. Hang on.
You're kidding me with that's ridiculous, dude. Come on.
Is he holding guns or are those supposed to be his claws?
Yes. tiny baby hands.
What? His little arms. Look at his little arms.
So was he shot with a ray gun that gave him Tyrannosaurus Rex arms?
Maybe his arms got cut off and they're growing back. I don't know. But if they're growing back, they're growing back with gloves on. But
that's amazing.
I don't understand what's happening there. But yes, I despise Howard.
And his eyes are red. Like, he's bleeding from his eyes.
Well, at least those look like people as opposed to Sam Keith's artwork.
Fair.
What's up, Cole? He's looking at this. Look at the tiny baby arms on Wolverine. Look at that. What's going on with his eyes? Can you tell me what's going on with his eyes?
You read a Sam Keith book?
I hate you, Mark Radlich.
You're not the only one.
I'm gonna find some more fantastic Gary Frank art.
Yeah, the name of the episode is gonna be Green Lantern, Planet of the Apes, and Shitty Artists.
One great artist and a bunch of the worst things that have ever happened to comics. See, there's Gary Frank's Joker from the current Doomsday Clock series.
So they've been promising us this three Joker storyline for like 2 years now. What the fuck?
I don't know. I got nothing.
That's properly creepy looking.
Yeah, I feel like Gary Frank understands the human anatomy pretty well. Through the years, he's drawn pretty much everyone. You can find just about any character from Gary Frank. I really like his Shazam as well.
That's a good looking Shazam. Did you see the movie yet, Gavin?
Nope, I have not.
You don't want to, or just haven't had the time?
It takes a lot to motivate me to see a DC movie.
Okay.
I mean, it takes a lot.
I liked it. I was going to say, well, what I said to Robert on the podcast, and it got a little muddled because Robert turned into Jeff Harris on me. It wouldn't let me get a fucking...
I couldn't tell you were getting annoyed at all.
No. It didn't come out on the podcast?
Okay. No, not at all.
I could not get a thought out. But yeah, I would say with the exception of Justice League, which was sort of an aberration, pretty much since Wonder Woman, everything's been a hit. You know, they've done really well with it. Now, your individual tastes may vary, but for the most part, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and Shazam were all quality products that didn't have a tremendous amount of production issues from the get-go, unlike Justice League and Suicide Squad did. With that being said, if you're asking me to rank them, I mean, it's hard. They're very different films.
Would you say it's top five?
Of the DC films since Man of Steel?
Starting with Man of Steel.
It would have to be. There's only been like six movies.
So it's not last.
Man of Steel, BVS, Justice League, Wonder Woman, Suicide Squad, Shazam, and Aquaman. It's seven. So I would put it in the top five, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, Gavin, I probably wouldn't have gone and saw it if I didn't have a kid that was kind of excited about it because of the trailer. So, I mean, it wasn't a complete waste of my time, in my opinion. But do you go see movies a lot?
Not as often as I would like, but okay. I will definitely be there opening night for Avengers.
Oh, yeah, I think there's a lot of people with that plan for sure.
Oh, already got my ticket.
Yeah. Same.
But my issue with Shazam more than anything right now is just how bad he looks in the suit. It looks not good.
Didn't like it there. I mean, it didn't bother me, but that's not a character I've...
I will tell you that they leaned into how silly the suit looks. I don't know. It didn't bother me. I don't think it bothered people in the audience because like the film itself and the character kind of like I acknowledges he's wearing a silly suit and they just sort of like get past it early on. It's like there's nobody there that thinks he looks intimidating. So,
all right, well, let's get this party over with here. You know, Planet of the Apes, Green Lantern. We've talked a little bit about it here. Got to go to my notes. I'm on Tarzan, Planet of the Apes. I don't need another aneurysm. I think we've covered all our talking points. I really don't have much else to say. So, you know, any other thoughts there, Gavin? Final thoughts on the series itself? Would you suggest, if you were to suggest this to somebody, who would you suggest it to?
I would suggest it to a Planet of the Apes fan, but not a Green Lantern fan.
Okay.
If you're a general sci-fi fan and don't really know much about either universe, then I'm sure this is a perfectly passable book. If you're a hardcore Green Lantern fan, it's not even so much that this is bad. It's just that there's nothing new or particularly interesting here.
Okay. Mark, anything to piggyback off that?
No, that was perfect. Why mess with perfection?
All right. Very good. Very good. Well, then that brings our coverage of Green Lantern, Planet of the Apes to a close. We're going to turn over things to our plugs. So, Gavin Napier, what do you have anything to plug, sir?
Not really, no.
Mark Radlich, I know you got some plugs, sir. What do we got coming up on the schedule?
All right. As I said earlier, this week is the 22nd through the 26th. So tomorrow is Damn You Hollywood, Pet Sematary. It'll be Robert Winfrey, the young boyish mascot of the Rattleton Broadcasting Network, Chipper Skipper, Jason Teasley, and Alexis Haina. And
he is the Fred to our Scooby gang.
And then he is the Scrappy Doo to our Scooby gang. That's what he is. And then on the 24th is Twar, Hell, Hold Your Heat and Hammer High, everyone. And then, of course, the 25th is The Avengers. You know, all of us cool kids will be seeing that. However, if you're not, you can either watch the Gotham season finale or the Orville season finale, whatever tickles your fancy. And then on the 26th, myself, Robert, and Alexis Haina will be concluding our countdown to Avengers. We'll be looking at Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The following week, we've got all 900 books for Avengers Forever.
Oh, boy. That's going to be a fun one.
Hoo-wee. And then, of course, we'll be reviewing Avengers Endgame. No Metal Hammer of Doom that week. We'll have a TV party for the Orville, and Jesse and I will have a pants-off dance-off, because that's how great this season is.
That's good.
Because it's 9 to 5. What a way to make a living.
It's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
And then on May 2nd, Alexis Haina will be joining me for a TV party tonight for The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina Part 2. Saturday, May 4th, one of two things is going to be happening. I'm either going to be drunk at a Kentucky Derby party, hat and all, or I will make it home in time for Canelo versus Daniel Jacobs. And we just got word in from the ring, from Howard Lederman. He awards that round 106 to Canelo.
Already?
he's already scoring points. We don't really know how, but it's
something is amiss.
It's Canelo. So, Pat and I will either be doing commentary for that, or I will still be with my wife and my children at a friend of ours' Kentucky Derby party. We'll see what happens.
Very good. Well, for Gavin Napier, for Mark Radlich, I'm Jesse Starcher. Thank you all for joining us. We'll catch you next week. Avengers Forever. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for joining us. Make sure to give that Radlich in Broadcasting Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts we have to offer. We are at home on Spreaker, but you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and recently we have hit the air on Spotify. Find your favorite podcast platform and type in RADULICH to subscribe for some great content. If you enjoyed this show, please feel free to share and spread the word. And as always, we appreciate any feedback and look forward to entertaining you again soon.